This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Hoo-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. It's been a while. We had Thanksgiving. There was a Duck game. It's been like 3 weeks since we've had a show. So, of course, there's a ton to get to. We have to get to the basketball rankings. The early signing period for basketball has come and gone. Oregon finishes with a top 10 recruiting class nationally. They're still in it for a couple of five stars. They landed a five-star prospect who's one of the highest risers in the entire country. This kid went from a kid in the 40 or 50s, obviously talking about five-star small forward C.J. Walker. Kid out of Florida, looked like a top 50 recruit. Went to a big event and showed out, and after that jumped way up into the rankings, into the top 20 in the entire country. C.J. Walker playing as well as any prospect really in the country, a top 5 or 10 talent right now in the country in terms of how he's played lately. He's on the board. He's signed. It's over. He had his ceremony on Wednesday, but he'd already signed and faxed in his letter of intent. It was a done deal. That was for family and friends. C.J. Walker's a Duck. We'll talk about that. How did Oregon State do? Solid recruiting class. Top 50 class nationally. We'll talk about that. But first, and the most important, I think, for Oregon fans right now who are in panic mode this week, because you lost two recruits. Jared Casey, the four-star linebacker out of Kentucky, decommits. Less than 24 hours later, four-star safety Jeremiah Credell, the highest-rated safety ever to commit to the University of Oregon, decommitted. Two four-star guys gone from your class. And I start getting it immediately. Nemec, is it panic time? Nemec, should we be worried? Is this class falling apart? Oh my goodness. Oh no. What do we do? What do we do? Pump the brakes on panic mode, Oregon fan. Oregon has never had a top 10 recruiting class nationally. Ever. Ever. This class is rated number 5 in the nation, and you're still the favorite for Kayvon Thibodeau, the number 2 prospect in the entire country. He dropped a little bit on Rivals. He dropped a little bit on 24/7 Sports. So because of that, in the composite average rankings that 24/7 puts out, that averages out Rivals, ESPN, and 24/7, he's dropped to number 2. Still tied for the highest rated recruit you've ever had. He's 24/7 did an analysis of him and project him as a top 10 NFL draft pick. He's still coming back into the fold. He's still expected to pick Oregon on December 15th. It's not panic time. Jared Casey's your East Coast commitment. East Coast commitments, flip of the coin. Look what happened when Willie Taggart was here. Got a number of Florida guys. Everybody's all excited. Oh, this injection of Florida talent. Oh, this injection of Texas talent. RJ Henderson, 5-star receiver. He decommitted. So we've seen this happen before. You go get an East Coast, highly rated East Coast kid. There's a chance they go somewhere else. Jeremiah Credell still considering Oregon. Still could end up being a Duck. As it stands, he's looking at Ole Miss, he's looking at Oklahoma, he's interested in other schools. But I want to pump the brakes on this panic time thing. It's not panic time. It's nowhere near panic time. Now, if you were to lose 3 more guys, then you could start to talk about this being a problem. You could still lose 2 more 4-star prospects and still be tied for the most 4-star prospects you've ever had in one recruiting class. Oh, and by the way, you're still waiting on Kayvon Thibodeau to pick you on December 15th. Far, far, far from panic time. When you're in the mix, when you're in the mix for the top prospects in the country, you're going to lose some because big time schools are going to throw a lot of energy at taking your guys. That's what it means to be at the top. Oregon, you've probably never been here before. Never been in this spot. We still have our coach. That's what Oregon fans think. We still have our coach. How could we be losing commitments? People lose commitments near signing day. You just do. You lose a couple. On average, you lose 20 to 25% of your commitments. Oregon's still very much on track. Think of it this way. Oregon got the majority of this recruiting class shored up, done deal, committed in the spring and summer. So the fact that they haven't had commitments, decommitments in the last 4 or 5 months is really impressive. Now, you had them on back-to-back days, so I understand the, uh-oh, what do we do? But you're fine. Sean Dollar's the nation's number one all-purpose back. Jeremiah Crudell's best friend says, hey, man, no love lost here, or no problem here. We're still blood. We're still brothers. But I'm signing with Oregon. I'm enrolling early. I talked to Mace Funa last night, the highest-rated linebacker commit in the history of the program. He said, I'm solid to Oregon. I'm signing. I said, hey, what do you think with the modern-day trio now? Used to be a quartet. Crudell's going elsewhere. And he said, I talked to Jeremiah. I understand his reasons. I get it. I'm okay with him moving on. The other three of us are solid. Look at this recruiting class. You got the number one JC offensive tackle and the number one JC corner in the country. You've got the highest rated corner in the history of the program in the recruiting trail in Mikhail Wright, the number 19 prospect in the country. He's in the fold. Mace Funa, the highest rated linebacker commit ever. You've got problems at receiver. I'm not guaranteeing them they're fixed tomorrow, but you've got four elite receivers coming to Oregon. Lance Wilhoit, a top 100 kid. Micah Pittman, a top 100 kid. Josh Delgado committed to Oregon over USC and Washington. J.R. Waters, I saw J.R. Waters play in Eugene. Saw him play. Three-star kid. There's no way that kid's only a three-star talent. He was an under-the-radar prospect. He went to some camps, showed out, and as soon as people saw him and got eyes on him in person, he picked up offers from Michigan, Nebraska, Arizona State, and Oregon in about a week and a half. Took about a week and a half. That's just doing the background work, making sure he's got the grades, making sure. That means those schools wanted him right after seeing him. And he shut it down and said, I'm going to Oregon. That's the only place I want to be. 2D commitments, still the highest number of four stars ever in a recruiting class. It is far, far, far from panic time. Take a step back. Take a step back. Number five recruiting class in the country. You just went 8-4. You just went 8-4. This isn't a Heisman Trophy year. This isn't a Marcus Mariota year. This isn't a Joey Harrington year. You're not in the discussion for a college football playoff, and you've got the number five recruiting class in the nation. You're not in California. You're not in Texas. You're not in Florida. You're not in Ohio or Pennsylvania. States that are known for producing big-time talent. You're in Oregon. It is tough to recruit to Oregon in terms of finishing in the top five or six in the country. And that's where you sit. The one thing I think is a little bit of a cautionary tale with this class, and the thing I found the most interesting, and if we want to look at the bad side, I'll give it to you. I'll give you all sides of this thing. That's my job. Talk to Mace Funa. And he said, and it struck me, and he wasn't worried about it, but for me, having talked to classes in the past, this concerns me. This group is less close as a cohesive unit than almost any class I've ever covered. The last two classes were in group chats on Twitter, texting each other, DMing each other. They had a group text. They were all involved all the time, talking to each other, playing video games, sharing Xbox, Xbox accounts, playing video games together. This group hasn't talked much in the last two or three months. Now, individually, there are pockets where guys know each other. Obviously, the modern-day guys talk. They're at practice together. But individually, these guys are pretty separated. They don't talk a lot. And Mace said, I'm not too concerned about that. We all like each other. When we've been on our visits, we've got along. We've just kind of focused on our football season. And while that's a good perspective to have, and I trust that and believe in that, when the going gets tough, it's nice on the recruiting trail if you're a program to get everybody involved in a group chat, get them all to become best friends so that not only do they want to go to school together, but also if there's that pressure to decommit late, they also have to tell a big group of their soon-to-be best friends. Now, you can say that's not the healthiest thing, but it's the reality. In recruiting, you want your class to be close. This group is less close than last year's and less close than the year before that. They just are. And part of it is that it's a byproduct of recruiting national kids from all over the country. You do that, they don't grow up together, they don't know each other. The California kids know each other pretty well, but you've got pockets where they don't know each other. It's just the reality. Not panic time. Number five class in the country, and you still might get the number two player in the entire nation, Kayvon Thibodeau. Take a break, Oregon fan. Step away from the computer. Also this week, the Oregon Ducks landed Seven McGee, the class of 2021 prospect. He's the number two running back in the country. Talk about, before I talked about J.R. Waters looking really good at that Saturday Night Live, I don't know if anybody on the offensive side of the ball looked better than Seven McGee. Seven McGee likes to play slot. And this is the funny thing. People say, well, we saw him at running back. Anybody can run in it without pads. He didn't play really much running back at that Saturday Night Live. He lined up in the slot and went one-on-one against 4- and 5-star guys who are 2 years older than him. Oh, and by the way, he torched them. Seven McGee, as shifty, as dangerous, as electric as any freshman high school football player I've ever seen. Ever. Special. You could tell he didn't have a ranking. He wasn't ranked at that time. He was committed to Oregon. He had an offer from USC already as a freshman in high school. And I saw him and was like, yeah, this kid's legit. He's got a chance to be a 5-star. Now he's rated the number 2 running back in the country. He's going to be that athletic weapon running back wide receiver. Will he stay? Will he end up with Oregon? I think we've all learned. If you're an Oregon Duck fan, if you're an Oregon State Beaver fan, we've all learned a lot can change in a year-to-year basis, even if a kid wants to go to your school. Oregon's had 3 coaches in 3 years. Oregon State, 3 coaches in 3 years. A lot can change. But when I talked to him, he said, I decommitted from Oregon the first time. He committed, decommitted because there was pressure, and then recommitted and said, everybody wanted to see how many offers I could get. Alabama, LSU, could I get those? Because I got USC and Oregon as a freshman. I wanted to be uncommitted and detached. Everybody wanted me to do that to see what I could get. But he said, I loved Oregon. All along, I loved Oregon. I thought it was the place for me. I felt really good here. And he said, I talked to my grandma for an hour or two, and I love that. I mean, in terms of the spectrum of good kid, if I hear a kid say, I talked to my handler, red flag. I talked to grandma, ding, ding, ding. I like that. Said, I talked to grandma for an hour or two. And by the end of the conversation, she just said, you know what? This is no one's decision but yours. This is your mom's decision. It's not your dad's decision or your uncle or your auntie or your sister. It's your decision. Do what you want to do. And he said, I knew right then what I really wanted to do was be an Oregon Duck. I want to be like DeAnthony Thomas. I want to be a slot running back. And I'm telling you, I haven't seen too many kids who want to throw out that DeAnthony comp where I don't just kind of laugh. Seven McGee, when I hear that, doesn't make me laugh. Seven McGee is good. 2 years ago at the Saturday Night Live event, there was another slot receiver who looked special. He was a 4-star prospect. His name was Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle is a true freshman this year at Alabama, has about 650, 700 yards receiving and 6 or 7 touchdowns, and he's the return man. I'm telling you, Seven McGee looked almost that good going against kids 2 years older, and he hadn't even started his sophomore year in high school yet. Seven McGee is going to be special. How does Oregon fill out this class? How do they adjust? They're hosting a JC defensive lineman in the next couple weeks. He just picked up an offer. Court Dennison was at his house recently. And he's strongly leaning towards Oregon. I'll tell you who it is. He joins the show next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
From 5 stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
Early signing period, less than a month away. And if there's one area the Oregon Ducks are still working to improve, it's recruiting along the defensive front. Recently, they offered JC defensive lineman Samuel Okwunu, who grew up in Liberia. And he came over to America as a 13-year-old, picked up football as a senior in high school, went onto the JC ranks and had 17.5 sacks this year. Oregon, heavily involved in his recruitment. He joins the show now. Samuel, thanks for being on the show, man. Is he there? Marcus is working the phones.
Yeah, give me 1 second. I can hear him in here. I just can't hear him out there.
Okay. Samuel is a big-time I mean, you look at what Oregon's doing, and some of this here is Oregon's got good defensive line talent. That headliner, Kayvon Thibodeau, if he ends up picking Oregon, they're in great shape. 5-star prospect. But you need to fill that out, and one of the areas they really need to get better is pass rush. Sam, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, sir.
I was just telling people, pass rush is something Oregon needs to get better at. That is your specialty. 17.5 sacks this year. You're new to football.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You grew up playing soccer. Yes, you grew up in Africa, came to America at 13. What made you want to pick up football as a senior in high school?
I'm sorry.
What made you want to pick up football as a senior in high school?
So I played soccer all my life. Like I said, going into my senior year, man, all my friends were like, you too big to be playing soccer, man. You got to try football. And I ended up going to the summer camp. I ended up liking it, man. Not being part of the team, it was great meeting new people. But yeah, it was really just my friends like pushing me to try something new and be a part of a new coaching staff and whatnot. So it was pretty exciting.
Your story is interesting. Coming from Africa to America, obviously, in and of itself, is a unique or a very different than traditional approach to playing football or playing college football. Not a lot of guys come from Africa to America and then end up playing. But I think you struggled a little bit as a senior and then still wanted to pursue it and really looked for an opportunity at the junior college ranks. What made you want to stick with it, and what created that drive that you were going to try to play at the junior college level after, as you've said, your senior year in high school didn't necessarily go, you weren't an all-star necessarily in high school.
Right. My senior year was crazy. It was my first year playing. They had me starting on varsity and everything in front of the lights. Man, it was new to me. But you know, as season progressed, I ended up loving the sport. Fell in love with the sport. You know, after my senior year, I started looking for routes and options to do, because I didn't have the grades or the knowledge really about the game. But I just knew it was something that I loved doing, and I kept on pursuing it relentlessly, man. I ended up going to a junior college, just a regular community college back in Lowell called Middlesex. But after Middlesex, I went there for a semester. It just didn't feel right because they didn't have any sports team or whatnot. So I took the next semester off, my 2017 spring semester off. I took that off. I went during the summer of 2017. I went to Oregon. I went to Coloma Community College down in Mississippi, man. I tried out. I made the team, but then the red shirted me my first year there. And then I came back in spring. I did my thing, balled out. But, you know, they had pretty good recruits coming in. And it was only my second year playing football, like, you know, we talked about. So, you know, they were a little bit, you know, willing to take in a D1 bounce back than a kid who was only playing the second year, because down in Mississippi they only have a scholarship for out of state JUCO players, and they had a Missouri bounce back or whatnot. So after my spring, I sent my film everywhere, man. Saudi Range is one of the schools that reached out to me. That's where I'm at right now. They reached out to me, man. So I spoke to Coach Ives, the great coach. I spoke to Coach Kwan. He's another great coach, man. We just kept on talking. I fell in love with here, man. And I made a decision to come here in 2018, fall. And me and Coach Kwan, who's my D-line coach, we worked hard every day. He pushed me, man, beyond my imagination, really. I didn't think he would get me to where I'm at right now. But, you know, he helped me out a lot. I told myself I was going to get 20 sacks this year, but 17 and a half, you know, it was pretty amazing too for me, and I can only get better from here on.
So you jumped around. It's safe to say you jumped around. There was no easy approach. One that shows you love it. I interviewed you yesterday, and I wrote a story yesterday. And then after we wrapped up, I said, I'd like to have you on the radio show because I think your story is really interesting. And you kind of said, I still kind of can't believe this. This is crazy.
Yeah,
I went from Africa and playing soccer to America, and then I went to a couple different JCs, and now I'm an all-conference guy with 17 sacks, and Oregon's recruiting me. Has it hit you yet how unique and how different your path is than most people's?
It is, man. It's all, I leave it all to God, man, really. Because without God, man, none. You know, everything's possible through God, man. And but it didn't really sink in until I saw Coach Dennison in my house, sitting in my couch, man. I was like, wow, you know, this is really happening right now. You know, that's really when it sunk in. But, man, I'm just waiting, man. Just waiting for my time.
So you got a follow on Twitter from Mario Cristobal, and then you guys ended up connecting on the phone. And I imagine that in and of itself felt unreal.
It was.
And what did he say to you on the phone? And did you kind of believe it was him, or was there a part of you that was like, pinch me, I'm not sure this is real?
Right. So he reached out to me, man. It was early in the morning, man. It was really early. And he asked me if I was interested in the opportunity to play Oregon. And I was like, yes, sir, I'm very interested, you know. and I sent me his number and whatnot. I called him. Man, we talked for a pretty long time. He asked me where I was from, my background. And, you know, after the conversation, he told me I had to offer, man. It was, when he told me that, it was probably one of the most, probably one of the happiest moments of my life. I ain't gonna lie to you, man. It was one of the happiest moments of my life when he told me. I couldn't believe it. I called my mom and she was so happy, man. You know, just hearing her voice. She's actually back in Liberia right now. Just hearing her voice over the phone. She was so excited for me. But yeah, man, it's very exciting times right now.
So where does Oregon stand with you? We've talked about it. I wrote a story yesterday, and you seemed extremely high on Oregon when we talked about it yesterday. Where does Oregon stand with you now?
Fine, this still is I'm still extremely Oregon is top of my list, number one, man. It's number one. That's it. Oregon right now is number one school on my list. That's it. I'm leaving it like that.
And you've got a visit to Oregon coming up. Have you set a date?
Right. I just spoke to Coach Denison today, actually. I'll be coming there from the 7th to the 9th.
Very nice.
On an official visit. Yes.
And you've told me, you've seen campus, you've seen facilities kind of on the internet. You haven't been there yet.
Right.
If that visit goes well, it sounds like your decision becomes very, very easy.
Man, if that, I had to Coach Denison, man, what's the earliest I can commit? He's like, you know, I'm telling you, Oregon's that school, man. He told me he wanted me to make sure I was comfortable at Oregon, but I already told him, man. They got me, man. It's going to be hard for any other school to change my mind at this point, but Oregon is where my heart is.
All right, Samuel, thank you very much for sharing your story. I think hearing your voice, I think so often we talk to five-star kids who consider an offer just kind of a given. It's really refreshing to hear you talk about it with so much pride and excitement. I'm sure your mom is absolutely thrilled for you, and I'm certainly happy for you. I'm sure our listeners are very happy for you, too. So travel safe, have fun, and then assuming it goes well, I guess the audience looks forward to your commitment to Oregon here soon.
Yes, sir. I'm coming in very soon, very, very soon.
All right. A shout to mom or anything? Anybody you want to shout out?
Shout out to my mom. Shout out to my beautiful girlfriend. She's listening right now. Man, big shout out to my mom, man. She's been my number one supporter since day one, had my back through it all, man, through the ups and downs. So, you know, I just want to make her proud and, you know, put on for the city, man. Shout out to Lowell, Massachusetts, man. 978.
Samuel, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
You too. Man, you listen to a kid like that, Marcus, and I think the thing that stands out more than anything is the hunger and the drive. Imagine picking up football as a senior, falling in love with it. He didn't get into the details of it. He started, but he only had like 20 tackles. He didn't do very well. And by his own admission, he didn't always know where to be, as you could imagine, and he made a lot of mistakes. But he's 6'2", 270, and thought maybe someone will take a chance on me. I have good feet for as big as I am because I grew up playing soccer. And then he bounced around different JC schools, found a fit. They recruited a D1 kid who left the program he was at for whatever reason and said, basically, your spot's gone. Ends up in Minnesota. Now, he went from Africa to Massachusetts, down to the South, up to Minnesota, all for the opportunity to play junior college football, not even D1 yet, because he believed in himself. It's an inspiring story.
Yeah, man, that story, I mean, it's just the fact that when he was talking, he was so excited, right? And I think that was the biggest thing. Yeah, he was just happy, man. And that's part of it. I think a lot of us break it down as like, you know, these guys are recruits. Like, we'll come in and see them as recruits, obviously, and every, you know, their football talents. But you could tell sometimes when like people are genuinely excited to be a part of something. And like just listening to him talk, man, I was sitting in here smiling because like that's like basically what it's all about, you know.
And that hunger and that excitement is what separates guys who make it and don't. Now, he's got a lot to learn, and I'm not saying he's going to be a big-time prospect in college, but sometimes it comes down to, you see guys that have all the talent in the world, they were told since the 8th grade they were going to play big-time college football, and they get to college, and they've never battled for it. It's been easy for them, and they don't want to. They like being a celebrity, they like scoring touchdowns, but they don't necessarily like putting in the work. That's a kid who desperately wants to put in the work, and you can tell by his journey that he desperately wants to put in the work to be good. I don't know if it's going to pan out, but I'd certainly think everyone's going to be rooting for him, and if it doesn't pan out, it's not going to be because he didn't work hard enough. That's for sure.
Right, and I just think with with his situation, I mean, he has the size, and at that point, he's just raw talent, right? So then you bring him in, you try to really shape anything you can, right? You try to just hone in most basically on the football IQ and understanding football as a sport, not as a, you know, you're not athletic enough to reach this point, right? Because obviously he's gotten this far. And so if he can just focus in on, and that's what a lot of guys that I played with, that's what they needed to do, is just focus in on the football techniques. If you can get the techniques down and understand the game even better, I mean, shoot, man, if he has every tool in the world.
So he's got, there are a couple things. I think the easiest thing to do, the easiest thing in football, and nothing is easy because even as a pass rusher, you have to learn secondary moves. But the easiest thing is see quarterback, hit quarterback. You can tell a really strong, flexible, athletic, big kid, your only job here, we're putting you in on third and long. Your only job is to put your hand in the dirt and go after the quarterback. We don't care about anything else. And you can be mildly successful doing that. I imagine that would be where he'd start. The other thing is he has great feet from playing soccer. And you look at him standing next to Coach Dennison, who's not a huge guy, and he's 6'2", 270, and he looks like a very normal guy. If you just saw a picture of him and he was on a hill, you'd think maybe he's a safety because he carries his weight so easily. They'll put weight on him, so he's going to be strong with good feet and instinct. 17 and a half sacks last year or this season is no fluke. He knows how to get to the quarterback. I think we're all rooting for Samuel, and I see some good signs that he's got potential. There are flyers that you take that you go, man, Oregon must be missing to take a JC guy. And then there are flyers that you go, man, this could be actually really interesting. And I think Samuel Okwuanu is one of those. We've got to talk about basketball signing period. I wanted to get to it last week. I asked if I had a show. It was Thanksgiving evening. I was willing to do a show. They told me, go home to your family, Nimick. You have a newborn. I said, okay. So we'll get to it next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimick on 1080 The Fan. The early signing period for college basketball has come and gone, and it was a little bit of a surprise. I think what people expected to happen in the Pac-12, frankly, didn't. You look at all the stuff we've seen about college basketball scandals, you'd think maybe Arizona's in trouble. And then USC, never a traditional power, maybe they're going to struggle. Arizona and USC finished number one and number two, respectively, in the nation. For all the talk about Arizona being in trouble, they had the nation's number one recruiting class, Marcus. It doesn't seem like people, generally speaking, are particularly worried about sanctions based on this FBI investigation.
But this is why I think a lot of people think college basketball has just turned into a big joke, because you know, you remember when all that stuff happened with Arizona, and you're thinking, okay, Arizona's going to be in some big trouble. You know, I personally don't know anything about what kind of sanctions they could have got with that, you know, with all the recruiting stuff. But, you know, you would figure it would be something, right? And then at the end of the day, it wasn't anything. And then look at Arizona's recruiting now, right? It's still at the top.
Yeah, they landed the number one point guard in the nation, Nico Mannion, the number three small forward, Josh Green. They landed Zeke Njai, the number eight power forward, the number six shooting guard, Terry Armstrong. It's a really good recruiting class. It's the type of class that you go, well, everything's firing on all cylinders, which is insane given what happened. USC with a big class as well, the number two class in the nation, headlined by 2 5-star prospects. And then there's Oregon, and I said a couple weeks ago, when your first commitment's a JC guy, you're probably not going to have a huge recruiting class. And while this isn't a class that lives up to last year's when they landed Bol Bol and Lou King, it's still a very good group, albeit one that's inflated by a kid who may not ever come to campus. They started with Chris Duarte, who's the number two junior college basketball prospect in the nation. He's bounced around number one and two. He's got a lot of length, 6'6", 6'7", can play the one through the three. You know, Dana Altman loves those guys, and Duarte's going to do a lot for them. They get off the bat right there. Then they add Isaac Johnson. We talked about the last show we did. Isaac Johnson's one of the top 100 prospects in the country. The problem is he's taking a 2-year Mormon mission. He will not join Oregon until the class of 2021 in any type of basketball sense. So while they have him and he signed a letter of intent and they get credit for signing a top 75 prospect nationally, he will be no part of this program for 2 years. He will have no contact with the program for approximately 2 years. So then you start wondering, as they enter the early signing period, is Oregon in a little bit of trouble? And they were in it for a number of guys, but Cassius Stanley, Cole Anthony, two five-star guys, kind of were hinting that they were going to sign during the late signing period in February. So you're thinking, maybe Oregon's not going to do that well. But they land Chandler Lawson, the number 78 prospect in the country, a power forward out of Tennessee. Chandler Lawson's a big-time player, one of the top 20 power forwards in the country. Chandler Lawson, 6'8", 205. Again, we talk about that 6'6", to 6'8", athletic players. Chandler Lawson, yet another one. So then you go, okay, starting to come together. Chris Duarte, arguably the junior college player of the year. Isaac Johnson, you may not get him for 2 years, but he's a top 100 kid. You feel good about that. And Chandler Lawson. And then there's the recruitment of C.J. Walker. C.J. Walker, a five-star small forward on Rivals, again, right in that wheelhouse, 6'8", 200 pounds, final three of Miami, LSU, and Oregon, and nobody had a great feel. There was some who thought Oregon. I talked to him. He said Oregon was his absolute best visit in terms of facilities, but he just didn't feel, it just didn't feel like it was a for sure thing. We saw predictions all over the map, predictions for Miami, predictions for LSU. A guy from 24/7 Sports who's pretty well connected picked him to Kentucky, who wasn't even in his final three. That's how all over the map it was. And then it came down to it, and day of, people start saying, it's going to be Oregon. And sure enough, Oregon lands C.J. Walker. C.J. Walker, we talked about him in the beginning of the show, a top 50-ish player in the country for a long time. And then he goes to a big-time event and shows out and looks like one of the top players in the country. And not only that, with his athleticism, with his length at 6'8", 200 pounds, he projects as an NBA player. C.J. Walker picks Oregon, signs with Oregon, and just like that, Oregon has the number 7 recruiting class in the entire country on 24/7 Sports. There's a big gap between Arizona, USC, and then Oregon. This class does not necessarily compare to last year's when Oregon got Bol Bol, Lou King, both 5-stars, and then 3 or 4 4-star guys. This class isn't that. There's a gap. That top 3 and 4, the Blue Bloods, recruited a high level. Last year, Oregon recruited and competed and beat out the Blue Bloods. This year's not quite there, but it's still a really, really good recruiting class. Oregon State, on the flip side, goes real guard-heavy. Gianni Hunt, arguably the headliner of the class, a 3-star point guard. Jared Lucas is a combo guard. Jared Lucas, though, has been killing it.
What did he have, like 50 points in his first game this season?
51 points or 52 points in his first game, and then 39 with 12 rebounds in his second game or third game.
Jared, that's a steal.
And he played in AAU, and he played for one of the top AAU teams in the nation. And he was their go-to point guard, and he was a big-time scorer. And there's some question about his projection because he's a 6'2 shooting guard. So there's some questions about his length. There's some question about his size and how he'll defend. But the undersized combo guard that can really, really fill it up and score is exciting. I actually like what Oregon State did, even though it's only a top 50-ish recruiting class, 50th or 51st. It's a good group of guys that I can understand what they're looking at, project it forward, and say they've got a chance to be decent and pretty good here going forward. They're certainly going to score.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've witnessed with Oregon State basketball, their biggest problem is, I wouldn't say it's defense, but it's just finding some offensive rhythm, right?
And that comes through your point guard.
Exactly, and I think that's what they've been lacking in these past couple seasons is just a true point guard, like one who's going to come down, right? You set up your offense, you know, you basically are in command, right? And that's what your point guard should do, right? You shouldn't have, and maybe that's just the problem because you have some great players like Trez Tinkle, Steven Thompson, Ethan Thompson. You have these guys who can all really handle the ball, but you need a true point guard. And sometimes their offense just looks like they don't have an identity and they can't really find ways to score easily.
Yeah, I mean, point guard's clearly been their biggest problem. And you look at Derek Bruce moved on and went to Texas Southern and has been pretty good. And you just kind of wonder what might have been if he sticks around because he's been productive. Oregon State just hasn't found that point guard to keep him in rhythm. And it's too bad because they're reaching a point where Stevie and Drew's obviously already moved on. Trace going to move on. And I think they found their point guard in Gianni Hunt. They also, by the way, have a very good player coming in Jared Lucas who could play either spot. I love this recruiting class. I just wonder if it's maybe a year too late to put together a primo package for Wayne Tinkle, but I still like the future there. The big question now going forward, Oregon has the number 7 recruiting class. We said this class isn't yet to where the other one is. Can they get Cole Anthony, the number two player in the country? North Carolina looks like the most likely landing spot. Can they land Cassius Stanley? If Cassius Stanley would have signed during the early signing period, I would have thought Oregon was probably the favorite. As it stands now, I think it's UCLA. But they're one five-star player away from this being right up there and being a very special group. It'll be interesting to see. I want to do a postseason wrap on Oregon and Oregon State. How do their current recruiting classes fit in? How do we see them helping, particularly Oregon State? How do we see them getting better with the influx of talent they're getting? We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
From five stars to unknown prospects, we cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
All right, Marcus. It's that time. Oregon State finishes the year 2-10. It was a slog. It was a struggle.
Hey, did we expect anything different, though?
No.
Let's be real.
No.
Exactly. I think a lot of people forgot about that.
So no, I hope people understand that. But what I want to talk about is whether or not they improved and how we see this recruiting class plus the transfers helping them out. Did they improve this year? We'll start there.
I think they did. I really think they did. Maybe not. And what I always told people when it comes to this Oregon State season, this upcoming one, I was like, listen, we're not going to see it wins and losses. You're going to have to, one, get the kids back to being confident, because these kids don't know how to win at a Division I level. Because if you come to Oregon State, it sounds bad. I know, because I went through it. Like, you're not going to win a lot of games at first until somebody sets the foundation. And we thought we had the foundation set, but obviously they don't. But, you know, I'm just going to say, for Coach Smith in his first season, it was successful because you find certain pieces. Isaiah Hodgins doesn't have a breakout year, but you can see what he's about. Jamar Jefferson, same kind of thing. I would say the biggest question mark, though, is the defense. Somebody has to do something about that, because that is historically bad.
I don't blame the defensive coordinator this year,
right, you can't,
at all, because he got the pieces he got, mm-hmm. and that D-line had no chance. And you saw the writing on the wall last year. It was like, man, this D-line is bad. People are going to run all over him.
Right.
And then a year later, they graduated some pieces. They lost some pieces to injury. Elu Aiden improved a little at the end of the year. I think there's a glimmer of hope there. I think the linebacking core has got a chance to be decent in the next couple years. I think there's reason for optimism there. But they were atrocious on defense. I think where you look and see improvement certainly is the play calling. I think offensively, they're a better team than they were last year. They do some creative things. I think their play calling, minus a double reverse pass, is better than what Oregon runs. I think Oregon is borderline ghastly in what they call offensively. It's vanilla. It's uninteresting. It's unimaginative. It's predictable. It's a little embarrassing for Oregon, this program that's known for its offense being as vanilla as they are. It's jarring for Oregon fans to see. Oregon State's creative and interesting and does some cool things conceptually. Again, you know, I know anytime anybody compares that, Oregon immediately is going to tweet, hundreds of Oregon fans are going to tweet, what about that double reverse pass?
Yeah,
I get it. Generally speaking, they put their players in a position to succeed, and they do some unique things that throw a defense off. The question going forward is, how will they improve at quarterback? In the Pac-12, you have to have a good quarterback to compete. It's absolutely like the NFL now. You have to have a good quarterback. And the O-line and D-line. Because the O-line gave up 40 high 40s in sacks, 48 sacks, something like that.
Yeah, it was like 48 or 46.
And I think that D-line was one of the worst D-lines I've ever seen in the Pac-12. The problem is line play. Receivers, you can inject the talent, and he's pretty good as a freshman. Running back, we saw that with Jermar Jefferson. You know, Hodgins looked good as a freshman initially, and obviously you see he's a piece. Offensive line play is a cohesive thing, mm-hmm. and often those guys need to get stronger and bigger and learn the playbook and learn the scheme and learn the intricacies up front. When they see a blitz or when they see whatever, changing things up front, that takes time. It's going to take a while for this group to figure out, and we've seen, you look at Oregon State's recruiting, I think there's reason for optimism, but right now this recruiting class is tied for the worst class they've had in more than a decade. They're 68th in the country. They were 68th last year. Last year's class was the worst they had in a decade, and there are only 13 commitments. But that's misleading, because they added four four-star talents via the transfer route. Tristan Jebbia immediately comes in and competes for with Jake Luton for the starting job. I mean, I think that's fair to say. That's certainly the plan. Tyjon Lindsey's an electric slot receiver, kick returner that I think is an automatic upgrade. You put him with Bradford and Hodgins. You've also got Champ Fleming, and that is interesting, I think. And then up front, Avery Robertson was a top 10 linebacker in the country. I don't know if he transfers because he wasn't making it at Nebraska. That's the question.
Yeah.
On film, he looks like a good football player from high school, but sometimes those guys get to college. We just talked about it when we talked about Samuel. Samuel has that hunger. Will Avery have that hunger? Will he have that want to? Will he have the ability to be good? And then we know Gums is good. Addison Gums from Oklahoma, the defensive end, should be an immediate starter if he can recover from that knee injury. I think they're going to be better. I just don't know how much. I just don't know how much. Maybe a four-win team? I mean, is four wins, will Oregon State fan be okay with four wins, or are they upset? Because I do think Oregon State's having a hard time recruiting big-time talent. There isn't an absolute capital dude in this recruiting class. There's no one guy you look at. Jermar Jefferson, last year I looked at, and he was a three-star kid, but I went, that kid's going to be good right away.
Yeah.
The other guy they recruited that I thought would be that guy was quarterback Brock Purdy at Iowa State, and I talked about him on the show and said they need to get him on signing day. I said it was their biggest miss. Oregon State was set to host him. He got offers from Alabama and Texas A&M, who offered a ton of kids, just hoping to get him. Alabama and Texas A&M got their quarterback answer elsewhere, backed off Purdy. Oregon State saw the offers from Alabama and Texas A&M, so they back off. And Brock Purdy is arguably your true freshman first-team All-American. He is the reason Iowa State has a resurgence and is as good as they are. He's been the starter, and he's been unbelievable.
Right,
this year.
He really has.
He's been unbelievable this year.
Those are the kind of things that you just see that Oregon State has done. You know, it, and I know it's not all right. It's not all the players, not all just the coaches, whatever right. It is. It's just, you know, you have someone like Marcus McMurrin. He's not right. He's not going to come out and wow you and put up crazy numbers, but he does the right things you need to win. And then he leaves. And then from there, you try to fill the gap. And Oregon State just hasn't had a set quarterback, I think, for quite some time. You know, it's been a bounce back between Blount at one time, it was Gerritsen, then, you know, even, you know, Luton. These guys, you're just throwing a bunch of names in, you're just like, man, like, we just need a set guy. And I think with is it Jebbia? I don't want to pronounce it wrong.
I've been saying Jebbia. I believe it's
with Jebbia. Him coming in, I think he'll be the set guy, but I think offensively, you know, you have that guy come in as a set stone as your quarterback. You get those guys on defense. I think they, you know, four wins, I think Oregon State fans will be at least not happy, but right. But you see that there's progress being made. And I think that's the biggest thing that they want to see.
And I think quickly, Oregon, to me, they need receivers. And mm-hmm. and I think people underestimate how bad, and I bad, underlined bad, their receiving core was outside of Dylan Mitchell. You want to know why Justin Herbert was locked onto Mitchell all year? It's because Jalen Redd, you know, Brendan Schooler, those guys couldn't get separation. And then when Redd could, he had a hard time catching the ball. He had a lot of drops. They need an injection of talent. They've got 3 4-star receivers and a 3-star receiver coming in. It is really tough to come in as a true freshman and be a 600, 700, 800-yard receiver, but they're going to be deeper. Generally speaking, I don't know. I think Oregon's so young, they return so many pieces. I don't necessarily see a need for a lot of freshmen to come in and play. Yes, at receiver, maybe Mace Funa makes an impact at linebacker, maybe some help in the secondary, but I think Oregon wants depth. I don't know that Oregon needs plug and play right now, especially with, you know, almost everyone on offense returning and most of their defense returning.
You get receivers on that offense and it's on a whole different level.
Yes. Well, the receivers, yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. More next week, the lead up to signing day. Who should Oregon fans be looking at? Who should Oregon State fans be looking at? We'll talk about that next week on Recruiting with Andrew Nimick on 1080 The Fan. Thank you, as always, for listening.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nimick, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan.